good evening. I hope everybody's well and has no problem finding the location. There are a lot of new people tonight, so I will do a very quick review of last week's class. One of the things that I do before every class is to bring a unique energy called the energy of creation into the room. And I do that by saying a Hebrew prayer, but I do it next week. Is the first week that you would be given tools. Last week is an introductory class. This week is a history of the Kabbalah class. The next week is when we will start to give you tools to improve your life and to remove chaos from your life. This is a 20-week class. 10 of those weeks, I will be here physically. The second half will be up to you if you want to continue it through internet connection, where we will do video conferencing as well as telephone conferencing. Every class is recorded, which I'm doing now. So let me start with saying some Hebrew letters that make no meaning to you right now and may feel strange and absurd, but over the next few weeks you'll find that it's not absurd and there's a very specific reason behind it. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi Ayin En Bet Ufresh Ayin Sin Tet Nun Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Tav Ufresh Ayin Bet Tet Resh Tzadi Tav Gimel Het Kufet Tev Nunayan Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shin Kuf Av Tzadi Yud Tav Or Shin Kuf Av Malchuto Le'olam Vayit. I also bring in the energy of Kedusha, the energy of holiness, by reading a verse from the Zohar. We'll discuss the Zohar again next week. The Zohar is a commentary, but that's such an absurd word to apply to the Zohar. It's a commentary on the Bible, on the Torah. But it's the essence of the Torah. It's the inner essence. If somebody reads the Bible and you read it on a simple story level, many times there's conflicts between the stories, between the verses. It doesn't make sense. And there's no way to reconcile it. But when you understand the inner essence of the Bible, of the stories, what it's trying to teach us, not morals and ethics, because that's religion. And Kabbalah is not religion. But we'll talk about that in a bit. Vayi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenehu Tachatze Kol Chad V'Chad Salik Ve'asara V'chavo Shitin Ve'inun shitin gavrin, div sacharanai, shikinta ve'inun shitin rabbanavan, v'nafku im Yisrael migaluta, udalu im Yaakov v'galuta. Come and see, each one of the aforementioned six extremities equals 10, meaning from the illumination of Zeranpin itself, whose sephirot are counted by tens, as aforementioned, and the six extremities become 60. Then they are the 60 valiant men who surround the Shekhinah, as is written, Behold the litter, that of Solomon, which is a verse from Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, which is the Shekhinah that is called Bed. 60 valiant men are round about it, of the mighty men of Israel, and they are 600,000. When she receives the illumination of Chassidim from Atik Yomin, as mentioned above, that emerged with Israel from the exile and came without Yaakov to the exile. And I'm reading from the Parasha of Shemot, section 28, Make Haste, My Beloved, and it's verse number 244. And the verse is talking about the Tree of Life, which you may or may not be familiar with. it's explaining that there are 10 spherot, and each of those spherot have spherot within them, and each of those 10 spherot have spherot within them, and each of those spherot continuing. There's no limitation, there's no end to the essence. There's a world that we don't see called atoms and molecules. There's a quantum level of our physical world. There's a world of outer space, and they're all consistent, and they all follow the same patterns of creation, and that is the tree of life. And that's really what the verse is starting to talk about. Talking about exile. Exile is a code word in the Jewish religion and in all of the religions. You talk about exile as being thrown out of the country of Israel. But exile really means separated from the Creator. And when you understand it on that level, it becomes a totally different aspect. We're never separated from the Creator. We go into exile because that's the illusion of our world. And that's what we spoke about last week. We start out in that first class very simply with some games, some tests, some ideas of the, basically we make a statement, and I'm going to make it almost every class. Never believe a word I say. We are not here for you to believe me. We are here to give you tools and for you to determine for yourself whether those tools work. Don't believe me. And we in Kabbalah teach knowledge, not belief. If I drop this phone, will it fall to the floor? I see people shaking their heads. It's okay to say verbally. Will it fall to the floor? Probably, and yes. What's the reason behind the probably?
Laws of physics
says it's going to fall to the floor. But I'm going to call an angel and it's going to pick it out of the air, so maybe it probably is right. Is that possible? Will it fall to the floor? Normally speaking, the answer is yes. Is that belief? I believe it will fall to the floor. Or is it knowledge? I know it will fall to the floor.
Knowledge.
It's knowledge. What is knowledge? Something that has been experienced. The first time the word knowledge is used in the Torah, in the Bible, is it says that Adam knew his wife, Chava, or Eve, and she became pregnant. So the Zohar asks a very simple question that we as children, because we learned that verse as children, but we never really asked this question. So I hope I don't offend anybody with it. But the Zohar asks the question, did they have sexual intercourse? Or did they just shake hands?
Probably.
They probably shook hands? They probably had intercourse. The Zohar teaches us they had intercourse. But that the reason that the word knowledge is used is to teach us that the inner essence of knowledge is connection. When you experience something, you have an inner connection to that thing. When you believe in something, I believe in God. What I'm saying is I'm not sure God exists. I may have 99% certainty that God is alive, that God is there. But if as long as I use the word belief, I'm implying doubt. There's that 1% that I'm not sure. I know there is reincarnation. I don't believe in it. I know it. I have experienced the truth of it. I know there is a God. Do you have to know there is a God in order to use the tools that I teach you? The The answer is absolutely no. Because the Kabbalists teach us that the Creator wants to share goodness with His creations, and He doesn't care what you think of Him. He doesn't care. He only wants you to get and receive, which is what the word Kabbalah means, to receive. He only wants you to receive His goodness. Now, we look around the world, and it doesn't look like we're receiving a lot of goodness. There appears to be a lot of pain and suffering and chaos. That's the accurate statement. Because we do not know how to receive His goodness, it comes to us sometimes as chaos. Kabbalah will teach you how to receive it, so it's never chaos, and show you how to remove the chaos that you already received. Are there any questions? Yes.
My question is the way that Kabbalah is teached, because this is my first experience. Is Kabbalah taught as a way to teach people as tools to enter, or is it sometimes taught as an academic?
That's exactly the subject I was going to be bringing up, so thank you. The question is Kabbalah taught the way I teach it, or is it taught academically? How is it taught? And I'll answer the question during the course of the discussion, because I want to stay focused a little bit on last week. Because last week what we said, and again, do not believe a word I say, but experience it for yourself. Last week, we demonstrated to you that our senses are designed to perceive illusion. They're designed to see untruth. We see with our eyesight upside down, and then the mind or the brain or the optic nerve sends the message to the brain, who interprets it by turning it right side up. That whole process is room for error, room for mistakes, room for not seeing everything. On another level, we don't see infrared rays. We don't see ultraviolet rays. So we don't see the complete truth. What we see is an illusion. And yet, this is the sense that we have available to us. It was given to us for a reason. We are to use it. But we're also to know its limitations, that it isn't truthful. It will confuse us. We also need to understand about our senses that the world is illusionary. What we see is illusionary, but there is truth built into that. And it's for us to learn how to discern truth. So, the history of Kabbalah is essentially starts with something called before the Big Bang. So let's understand what science teaches today in a very general way. I'm not a scientist. I'm knowledgeable about some of this, but I'm not an expert. But we all have heard of the Big Bang theory that says that the physical world was created through an explosion, and then it condensed into planets, and it condensed into stars, and it condensed into galaxies, and all of this process. There's just one issue that people don't get explained when they're told this, and that's the mathematics of the Big Bang Theory breaks down when you try and measure or say what happened a tenth of a second after the Big Bang. What were the conditions like? The mathematics break down. It doesn't work. The Big Bang Theory is correct. happened in the physical world. It happened in the spiritual world. And it happened eons before the creation of the physical world. There's another scientific theory that is making the rounds called string theory. And string theory essentially says that the subatomic particles all come down to an element called a string that vibrates and makes a sound. How does that sound get transferred? If there's no atmosphere to transfer it, they haven't really addressed yet, but it's part of it. And again, the Kabbalah teaches that this theory is also very much valid. Because if we read the Torah, we read the Bible, it says God said there was light, and then there was light. So we know that creation happens with sound. The third area, or the third theory that seems to be going through the scientific community is that of the M theory, membrane theory. And that essentially says that all universes are separated by a very thin membrane, and that this universe was totally empty, and there was a penetration of the membrane and an ejaculation of everything that would ever be come into existence in this universe. It's a very sexual description. And if we read the Zohar, we find sexual descriptions throughout the Zohar. It's a very powerful allegory. It's a very powerful metaphor. And so we use it. And it's done for a reason. And there's a reason why male and female exists, and why every species, not every species, but most species, have male and female, and what that represents. And we'll come to understand that through the course of the classes. All three of those theories are accurate, but incomplete. Now, again, don't believe a word I say, but Kabbalah was given, was created, was taught at the moment of creation. And the moment of creation is something called Tzimtzum. But it's actually, there is something before the Tzimtzum, and I'll explain what Tzimtzum is in a minute. There is a creator. I'm not going to prove to you the existence of God. It's up to you to say there is or there isn't, and it really doesn't matter in the use of the tools. It's up to you. Is there a creator? Isn't there a creator? Doesn't really matter, except how do I live my life? Do I live my life that I'm a better person today than I was yesterday? Well, the creator wants me to do that. That is what religion teaches. That's not what Kabbalah teaches. Kabbalah teaches live your life better today than it was yesterday, however you define better. Because, and we'll come to that answer in a while, there is a creator, a first cause, cause and effect, step by step. Something happens, something is an effect. That something, that effect becomes a cause for the next effect. That effect becomes a cause for the next effect. This is a process. It works throughout chemistry, physics, all science, and it works in our life. You meet somebody and you fall in love. What's the effect of falling in love? Generally, it's some form of sexual union or some form of a marriage as a space for sexual union. Cause and effect. there is a first cause, something that does not have, is not an effect of something else. Rabbi Ashlag, who is one of the teachers that we follow, that I teach you, Rabbi Ashlag, who was a Kabbalist of the 20th century, Rabbi Ashlag, who was the revealer of the theory of relativity 2 years before Einstein revealed it to the world in 1905, and throughout history, as we know it, we can track every scientific advancement, every discovery, every technology was always revealed by the Kabbalists prior to the world receiving it in its the way we understand history in the physical world. There is a creator, and Rabbi Ashlag tells us, don't waste your time talking about the creator. It's not meaningful to your life. You don't need to know him. There is a creator. The creator had a thought. We refer to it as the thought of creation. The thought is, I want to be revealed. We use the word, I want, applying it to the creator, and it's a total corruption. There is no desire in the creator. The creator's essence is sharing. The creator's essence is expanding from himself. But he includes everything. So where does he expand? The creator had a thought to be revealed. So he created a world called the endless world. And in the endless world, there existed fulfillments as a cause and a vessel to receive the fulfillment as the effect. The endless world is described as total fulfillment of every desire ever conceivable. Every human being, every atom, every plant, every animal, every rock, in any world that ever exists in any of the universes, exists in the endless world. The Creator wants to be revealed. He revealed. He created the endless world. It's called Ein Sof in the Hebrew. And this went on for eons. The vessel had a sense of a lack, which is what is a desire. You have a desire for something, you're hungry. It means you have a lack of energy, lack of food. You have a desire for love. It means you have a lack. So you move around, you motivate, you're motivated to find the fulfillment for that lack. Every desire that we have is by definition a lack. In the endless world, we didn't feel lack, because the instant we sensed a lack, the creator or the fulfillment was there fulfilling it. So the endless world is described by the phrase, he and his name are one. He meaning the fulfillment, not the creator. The creator extended himself, created something called fulfillment, and vessel. So the endless world is a creation. It's a creation of something we cannot name. We call it the creator, but we don't know what that means. The endless world has fulfillment, and it has vessel, and they are in unity. He and his name. He is the fulfillment. His name is the vessel. Are in unity, are one. This is the endless world. This endless world went on for eons. There was no time, so we can't put years to it. There was no physicality. It was always spiritual. What does it mean to be spiritual? On one level, the definition of spiritual is sharing. On another level, esoteric. On another level, I don't know what spiritual means. But we'll talk about it and we will come to understand what spiritual means. The vessel constantly received. And one of the natures of a vessel, the essence of a vessel, is to receive. The reason for a vessel to exist is to receive fulfillment. It uses the tool called lack, desire, to receive its fulfillment. In our world, the vessel and the light, which is the word the Kabbalists use to describe the fulfillment, they use the term light. Why do they use the term light? Because in our world, if I take light on the end of a candle and I light another candle, have I shared light? Have I diminished the first candle?
No.
If I ignore the physical loss of wax, etc., there's no diminishment in the sharing. In our world, if I have $100, I can share $100. Can I share $101 unless I'm the U.S. government? The answer is no. When there's no diminishment in the sharing, that's light. And that's what light represents in our world. And that's why the Kabbalists use the word light. They name fulfillment light. It's ultimate sharing without diminishment. Take 10 candles and light a million candles. There's no diminishment in the initial light, and it will continue forever, lighting more and more candles, getting more and more candle power, getting more and more light. But then something happens. And it's the nature of a vessel to take on the nature of its fulfillment. If I take a cup of coffee and I pour hot coffee into the cup, eventually that cup becomes warm. It takes on the nature of what fulfills it. The vessel took on the nature of the light. The light it wants to share. Not wants, because there's no desire in the light. But the essence of the light is to share. The vessel took on the essence of the light. Now, who is the vessel going to share with? It cannot share back to the Creator. It cannot share back to the fulfillment because there's no desire in either one of those. The vessel represents the only thing that was ever created. Other things are formed from what's been created. But the only unique creation is desire. Because there's no desire in the Creator, there's no desire in the fulfillment, but there is desire in the endless vessel. When the endless vessel took on the essence of sharing as an attribute, it started to feel, I want to share. And now we get to a kind of a little bit hard to understand. We call it bread of shame. The Kabbalists call it bread of shame. The more I am fulfilled, the more I receive from the endless light, the worse I feel. I'm not physically ill, but emotionally ill. Consciously ill. I want to share, and I can't share because there's nothing to share, nobody to share with, no entity to share with. The more I receive, the worse I feel. The metaphor that the Kabbalists give us is, if I take you to lunch today, and we have a lovely meal, a wonderful conversation, and we leave a little bit inebriated and very happy. Great meal. We've all had those kinds of experiences. Let's do it again tomorrow. I picked up the check today. Tomorrow we go do it again. Great meals, great conversation, truly happy event. I pick up the check again. I do this every day for a year. What is going to happen to you? You're going to be happy I'm picking up the check? Or are you going to want to maybe once a year pick up this check? Feel something that you participated, you contributed? This is bread of shame on a physical level. It doesn't even come close to talking about the emotional pain that the vessel felt not being able to share. And so now we have this idea of the immovable force and the meeting the, or the all-powerful force meeting the immovable object. The vessel says to the fulfillment, I have a lack. My lack is bread of shame. My lack is I do not want to receive from you anymore. That's a desire. How does the life fulfill that lack? How do you share by not sharing? That is the tsimtsum. That is the concept of constriction. That is the concept of the light withdrawing into itself, leaving an empty space. The purpose of the empty space is so that the vessel can share. The purpose of the empty space is so that the vessel can make mistakes. The purpose of the empty space is the purpose of our world, because eventually that empty space solidified into the Big Bang, and solidified into our Earth, and solidified into the development of the human being, created, as it says in the Torah, Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, which was not on Earth. That whole process all started and is included in the concept of tsimtsum, which is restriction, which is paradox. The light, the fulfillment is everywhere. There's no space, no essence, moment that does not have fulfillment within it. But there's an empty space. That's a paradox. If everything, the light is everywhere, then what is empty space? Empty space is concealment of the light. The light is there, but it is not there. The light is there from its perspective, but not there from my perspective. This is the tsimtsum. And this is the basis of paradox. This is the basis of our world, our illusionary world. Now, the scientists tell us it took 15, 16 billion years for this physical Big Bang to come to our world today. And the religionists say it 5,771 years since that Big Bang, since the creation of Adam and Eve. And there is no inconsistency between those statements. They are the correct. They both are saying the same thing. It's just how you measure time. The first 2,000 years of that 5,771 takes a little bit longer than a normal year, a normal day. 6 days of creation, 7 days of creation took a little longer than a 24-hour day. we have progressed down to this point in our lives. We have been given 6,000 years to achieve our growth from infancy to adulthood to maturity, from youth to maturity. We're not talking about, I'm 63 years old, we're not talking about age in a human sense. We're talking about what is maturity and what is being a baby, what is youth, what is immaturity. The human race needs to achieve maturity. And the Creator gave us, or the light gave us, 6,000 years to accomplish this. And it says there are two paths to this accomplishment. One of those paths is the path of pain and suffering. If you hurt, if you get pain, you eventually learn not to touch the hot stove. You eventually learn how to become an adult. It's a long path, and it's a path of great pain and suffering. There's not sharing in that concept. In an overall way, there's sharing, because, hey, you're learning. So where are you getting the learning from? The other path is the path of Torah. Now, what is Torah? Torah existed in the endless world. Torah is the blueprint of creation. Every human being that ever exists, ever will exist, every essence is included in the Torah in a concealed and coded way. You want to know what you're supposed to do in your life? It's in the Torah. Is God talking to you? Every moment of every day, talking to you, telling you what to do. But if you have a child, do you tell that child what to do every moment of every day? The answer is no. The reason being is that at some point the child must make its own decisions and grow to become that adult by itself. That's the test. That's the reason for the concealment of the Creator of the light in our world. So that you'll stumble and fall and be picked up again. You'll make mistakes and learn from them, not to make that a mistake again. As one of my friends said when I got divorced, I hope you learned one thing. Never marry that woman again. Bottom line, we are here to make mistakes. And so there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. But mistakes is the path of pain and suffering. The path of Torah, which is the blueprint of creation, is a path where you can avoid making mistakes. It's understanding what you are to do in this world, in this lifetime, what is the reason behind your creation. And each of us was created. And each of us was created to do a specific action in this world. Actually, two actions. One that's on a quantum level, and one that's a very specific to me level. Those actions are called tikkun, correction. We all were part of the souls of Adam and Eve. We all participated in what is called the chet of Adam and Eve. Now, chet is translated as sin, but sin is not meant to be hell and damnation and this horrible nothing I can do about it that seems to come out of Western civilization. Chet in Hebrew means missing the mark. I shot an arrow and I missed it. I made a mistake. Didn't hit where I wanted it to. I can correct that the next time I shoot an arrow. That's what a chet is, a simple mistake. We all participated in this chet of Adam and Eve, and it was a big chet. It was a big missing of the mark. In fact, the Midrash says that Adam was 100 feet tall and fell to 8 feet tall. And the dinosaurs fell to the bee lizards at the same moment. And all of the world shrank into that level. And part of what we are to do is to correct that by growing it back to that level, by returning to the consciousness of Adam and Eve before the chet. That is part of what we are to do in this world. So we have 6,000 years of which we've used up 5,771. What happens in the year 6,000? You've read the prophecies, or you've heard the prophecies on the TV with the excuse my expression, the Christian evangelists telling you hell and damnation and all about the Armageddon War. And that is one path. It is the path of pain and suffering. But it is not the path that has to happen. There's another path in the prophecies, and you've all heard those as well. The lion will lie down with the lamb, and there will be complete peace and serenity. This is the path that Kabbalah offers you if you choose to use the tools to their full extent. The tools are simple tools, but they are not easy to do. They are simple to use, but you have to look at yourself honestly. You have to realize that the world was created for you, and that you create the world and everything that in it that happens to you. That there is a spiritual law called the boomerang law. What you do comes back to you. You do something that causes pain to somebody else, you have to experience pain in order to balance the universe. You do something that helps somebody else, then somebody else will help you. No. Very big difference between karma. My understanding of the word karma and my understanding of what is taught in the Eastern religions, karma says, I come into this world with a debt, with karma, something that I have to live through. I cannot change it. Kabbalah teaches you come into this world with life lessons to learn. Any life lesson that is painful can be changed. Any life lessons that is pleasurable can be enhanced. Karma can never be changed, but tikkun can be. And using the tools will achieve that, and we'll talk about that in the classes. So we have 229 years left to go. We have a choice. Now you have the reason why Kabbalah has been taught and is being taught in the 20th and 21st century. Why it's being made available to people like yourselves, like me, because I was a secular Jew, born Jewish, bar mitzvah, hadn't been back in temple till I had children. Had children, had them bar mitzvah, and now they live secular lives. But I discovered Kabbalah. I was given access to this information, and I chose to make it part of my life. What was I supposed to do in my life? My name is Hanoch. Hanoch is Enoch in the corrupted translation of the English Bible. You've all heard of Enoch, the guy who walked with God? Well, there's another Enoch, who's the son of Cain, who had a city named after him. But nobody reads that verse in the Torah. Hanoch walked with God. What does the name Hanoch tell me? It tells me about my soul. Hanoch comes from a shoresh in the Hebrew language every word has a shorish, a root. Hanok comes from a root that means education and dedication. That's how I knew to become a teacher. Would I have known that had I not discovered Kabbalah? Nobody ever taught me that. On our website, your names can be put in, and you can learn about your soul, what you are here to do. It's all available to you. Sometimes you won't understand it. Sometimes you don't want to understand.
And Hannah didn't die.
Hannah walked with God. Does that mean he didn't die? I'll leave that up to you. We have 3 books written by Hanoch, all of them different, all of them describing his journeys through the upper worlds. And Kabbalah teaches us spiritual law, physical law. Everything is included in the Torah, and the essence of the Torah, the soul of the Torah, is the Kabbalah. Now, about 60, 70, 80 years ago, a gentleman by the name of Gershom Scholem was sitting in his uncle's office. His uncle was a religious Jew, and Gershom Scholem was a secular Jew. And he was sitting in his uncle's office talking about what he should do with his life. And he had just graduated with his bachelor's degree. And he's looking around the book, the office, the library. They're talking about what he should do. And he points to a section of books. What are those? And his uncle says, that's Kabbalah. It's very esoteric. Nobody pays attention to it. You don't need to do that. Let's talk about what you're going to do. But Gershom Scholem took the bait. And he started to study what was written in those books. And he developed, he wrote his first book, I think was named Kabbalah, I forget. But he created a whole industry called academic Kabbalah. It's taught in universities today. It is not what I teach. Academic Kabbalah is taught by people who read the words but do not experience what the words tell them to do. They don't bring it into their life. It's an intellectual pursuit. And if that's what you want, I'm not the teacher for you.
Yep. So one question I have is, last week you talked to about astrology.
Mm-hmm.
Is that actually part of this channel, or is that something that you talked about? And I know that you said don't believe anything that you said.
No,
I think
this is the same.
And if yes, what's your sign?
Yeah, and he did. So I was wondering, wait a minute, is that
Kabbalah
or is that just something else?
You have a question as well?
Yeah,
it's along the same lines, so I'll answer all of them at the same.
Yeah, a little bit different.
Okay. My sign is, I was born on the 16th of Kislev, which is Sagittarius according to Western astrology. I was born in the year of the boar in Chinese astrology. And there's a third astrology called Vedic astrology that you may or may not have heard. We have a whole class on that. The answer of astrology, religions that teach there is one God have great difficulty with astrology.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they have great difficulty is when you look at the essence, the religion says I should be a better person today than I am yesterday because there's a moral reason for that. And astrology says that you can't change what happens in your life because it's all coming through the stars. Mm-hmm. So is it preordained or do you have free will? If it's preordained, why should I become a better person? Let me go out and rape 400 women. That must be pleasurable. Probably not, but, you know, I'm just using that as an excuse, as a discussion for shock value. I'm not a rapist. Please don't think I am. The question is, why should I be a better person? And it has nothing to do with morals and ethics, but we will come to understand why and what is the reason. But it relates to the difference between a baby, an immature essence, and an adult.
But when you were mentioning astrology, what's the difference?
When I'm mentioning astrology, it's very much one of the legs of Judaism. It's one of the legs of Kabbalah. Jacob had 12 sons. Why did he have 12 sons? Well, first off, he had 12 sons. So how can I even ask why did he have 12 sons?
He had a daughter.
He had a daughter. He actually had 14 sons and 15 daughters. But only one daughter and 14 sons are mentioned in the Torah, and we all always talk in terms of 12 when we're marching through the desert. And all of astrology is in that first parasha of Numbers, where it describes how the tribes march through the desert, because there's a relationship between the sons of Jacob, the tribes, and the astrological signs. And it is very much part of Kabbalah. And we teach it. It's a very useful tool. You want to know who to marry? Look at Hebrew astrology, not Western astrology. Look at Hebrew astrology. You want to know what you did wrong last lifetime? Look at Hebrew astrology. Very useful tool. But it's not something that you do just because it says so. It's understanding what are the limitations. I teach Hebrew astrology. I utilize Hebrew astrology. My website is one of the first five sites if you type in the word Jewish astrology. My website comes up. It's very much part of, built into the website, but not from Western astrology attitudes. Your question.
So, if it worked properly, it seems like the Kabbalah is sort of the esoteric root of all religions, because there's so many similarities, if it's understood correctly, minus the misinterpretations.
All spiritual paths start in the physical world and lead to the Creator.
There's only one truth. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
There's more than one truth.
Well, I'm referring to the
let's visualize a fish tank. Mm-hmm. One side the glass is green, one side it's yellow, one side it's red, one side it's blue. And I'm standing on the yellow side. Can I see the green side?
No.
What color is the fish?
It all depends on your perspective.
No, it doesn't. I'm standing on the yellow side, the fish is yellow. It's a truth. Now, do I want to know a higher truth? I got to climb up the side of the fish tank and stand on top of the glass and look down. And now I see a higher truth. The fish is silver.
When I say truth, I'm talking about the total truth. We'll put it all together.
Why do you think there is a total truth?
Well, if you consider that we don't change the laws of physics, they are what they are.
Excuse me, the laws of physics change in which universe you're in?
Well, that's not provable.
That is provable.
How is that provable?
That's called experience. Don't believe me. Prove it to yourself.
Are you a scientist or?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
His questions are very valid. And the issue of whether there is a single truth is very much a philosophical question that has been asked for centuries and needs to be answered.
I'm a truth seeker, but I also read science in order to have all
balance.
The facts and perspectives
and
balance. Yeah.
Which I do as well.
Yeah.
So, but the answer to your question is there one individual singular truth? I'll leave that for you to discover for yourself. I have discovered the answer for me, and therefore I have one single individual truth. Kabbalah is the path for me to follow. Is it appropriate for every human being? We learn in the Torah that there are 70 nations. Nation is defined as a group of souls with a similar desire to receive. That group of souls was part of Adam, and they participate in this world with a job. Each nation has a job. Each nation has a path to the Creator, a path to fulfillment, a path to the revelation of the light. That path is appropriate for people of a particular soul. Particular soul, we call it Jewish, but it's a whole discussion of what that means, because it doesn't mean the Jewish religion. But if someone has a Jewish soul, their path will be through the Kabbalah. Someone who has a soul from the nation of Amalek, their Amalek is the nation that God is fighting with throughout the ages. Amalek creates doubt. The nation of Adam, Amalek, its essence, its purpose of existence is to give you a counterpoint so that you can see the truth through its opposite. The nation of Amalek has a path to its creator, to our creator. The nation of Edom, that nation is Western civilization, essentially Greek and Roman. They have a path to the Creator. Is that the path for a Jewish soul? May very well be that he will follow that path until it's untenable, until it's no longer answering his questions, and he'll move on to somebody else. In the Torah, we have an absolute, perfect spiritual master. His name is Jethro. He's the father-in-law of Moses. He's not Jewish until he converted. And he converted after he studied every other path of spirituality. He learned all of the esoteric wisdom of the world. And then he heard about what happened to the 10 plagues and the splitting of the sea and the redemption from Egypt. And prior to that, and the reason that he was living in Moab at the time when Moses went there, was because he had been an advisor to Pharaoh. Pharaoh asked him, the astrologers are telling us that there's going to be a redeemer and we're going to lose the jewels. What do we do? And one of his advisors, Pharaoh's advisors, was Jethro. And Jethro, rather than answer, left. He left the employment, went to Moab, and became the leader of Moab. And then they didn't like his leadership, so they threw him out, and that's where Moses discovered his daughters and so forth. Everything is in the Torah a metaphor to understand the Kabbalah as it relates to the other spiritual paths. You have a blueprint. You go to build a house. You just get a set of blueprints from the contractor, general contractor, or from the architect. You go to somebody, your neighbor, who happens to be a plumber. He doesn't ask for the whole set of plans. He only asks for the plumbing set. You have another neighbor who's an electrical contractor. He asks for the electrical set of plans. You have somebody else who's a drywall guy. He asks for the drywall. Who asks for the whole set of plans? The architect or the general contractor? The Jewish nation, the nation that needs to follow the path of Kabbalah, needs all of the plans. The other nations need part of the plans. It's all truth. There's nothing wrong with only getting part of the plans if it fulfills you. I have a cup in front of me that's 4 ounces big, and I have a cup in front of me that's 8 ounces big, and they're both filled to the top. What's the difference? There is no difference. They're fulfilled. if someone's soul is fulfilled with the path they're following, I'm not a teacher for them. But if you're searching for truth, you haven't been fulfilled in the path you've been raised in the path you've discovered. Here is the truth, my truth, for you to utilize. Here are the tools for you to utilize. It's up to you if you want to.
I see bits and pieces of different in different towns, and I don't know how to help
them. I'm sure.
I've been through Buddha, I've been through Buddhism, I've been through Hinduism, I've been through spiritualists.
I understand.
And they all have a little piece.
They all have part of the picture. Kabbalah will have all of the picture. There is no question that you ask that isn't answered in Kabbalah. I may not know the answer, but that doesn't mean the answer doesn't exist. You cannot make that statement into the other paths.
There is one thing I like to say, that you have to experience it. That's been my experience. I don't feel it, believe it. Experience it.
Well, that's a whole other issue. Do we follow the idea of being from Missouri where I have to believe it? I have to see it in order to believe it? Or do you believe it first in order to see it? And that's a question that we will discuss at length over the classes.
And if you come in here already fulfilled and not really speaking, but you're still open,
you
can receive more and more of it.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
If you feel completely fulfilled, but you're still looking for more fulfillment, that's fine. The tools will be given starting next week. Step by step, there'll be 18 tools. The first 6-7 classes really is the core. It's all there. What happens the second half, you'll find enhancing it. But if you're not starting with what I'm teaching you in those first 6 or 7, and you don't have to. I have students who have come to me, learned the first 6 or 7, 8 classes, and then dropped out, and then came back later and said, I'm ready now. I wasn't then. There's no right or wrong. There's just process. A process that can be made shorter through the tools of Kabbalah, or a process that is longer through pain and suffering.
Well, there's also a lot of unlearning. This might fly in the face of what you think you already know.
If you are a searcher for truth, what you know is discardable. If you are not a searcher for truth and you approach it with an agenda, I want your truth to fit my truth, you'll have a lot of difficulty with that.
No, I'm a searcher for truth, so I'll discard it doesn't work.
That's all that I'm going to offer you.
Put the pieces together, there's no contradiction.
And if there's a contradiction, we'll find out how to resolve it. Are there any other questions?
If I may, you mentioned that Jacob had 14 sons. Is that in the Torah?
Yes.
Okay. And then also the other, the son of Cain.
Yes. Yes. That's in chapter, I think it's 5. Everything I teach comes out of the Torah. I do not discuss the New Testament. It's not real to me. But everything in the Torah, which includes the 5 books of Moses, the books of prophets, the writings which are called Psalms, Proverbs, the Scroll of Esther, the Scroll of Hanukkah, the Song of Songs, all of that. Now, the Christian Bible, just to give you some background, has substantially the same material, usually translated into English in a corrupted way, but it is always, there are changes. There's a different order to it. The books are in a different order, and verses are sometimes numbered differently. So, there are differences. One final comment is just, what I teach is Torah. Torah is a gift from the Creator. Torah is the game plan. Torah is the rule book. I cannot charge for teaching you Torah. Well, we live in a society that says my bills need to be paid. So I do request donations. You can leave cash on the table. You can send me a donation by PayPal. You can mail me a check. No one is ever going to be turned away from a class because they're unable to make a donation. And if you are unable to make a donation, then I can tell you that the tools of Kabbalah will change that. Any other questions?
Can I have my own Zohar and my own Kabbalah?
Yes. No, you cannot have your own Kabbalah, but you can purchase your own Zohar. And next week we will describe to you how to do that. The Zohar is the essence of the Torah. The Torah is called the Tanakh. That stands for Torah, Nevi'im, which means prophets, and Ketuvim, which means writings. It's an acronym, Tanakh. Taf, Nun, Kaf Sofi. We'll talk next week about what you are to do as the first tool, which will be to be involved with the Torah, to be involved with the Zohar, and to utilize the Hebrew letters as they are meant to be, because they were designed by the Creator to transfer metaphysical energy to your soul. They were designed by the Creator for you to utilize them and to be changed by them. They were the first vessel that was created, and the Zohar says that that God played with the letters for 2,000 years.
So if I have an experience and change, then I haven't really taken it real through. Sometimes I was born. I don't see any difference of me and me after. So that means that I never been exposed to any knowledge. Or?
It would be very rare that you would walk into this class if you had not changed. But you may not have noticed the change. And the change could have been very minor. And you'll find that change starting to accelerate through the use of the tools. But we are here to be a different person today than we were yesterday. There is no such thing as serenity in this world. And we learn that from the story of Jacob, who he works 22 years for his four wives, and he has 13 children, and he comes back to the land of Israel, and he settles in Shechem. And it says, the Torah says, he settled, meaning he was, I don't need to do any more spiritual work. I did all of it. I've studied all the spirituality. I know what to do. I have my connection to the Creator. I have Ruach HaKodesh. I don't have to work so hard. And the Torah says that God said, oh, you want to settle? Let me show you how you settle. So he has his daughter raped. And he has his favorite son sold into slavery. And he thinks he's dead. And he thinks his whole image of the 12 tribes has been destroyed by this. And he loses his connection to the Shekhinah, to the Ruach HaKodesh, to his connection to God. All of this because he was saying, I don't have to do spiritual work anymore. If we are in this physical world, we have spiritual work to do. Kabbalah teaches that no one dies without having a reason for dying. One of those reasons is you live the full length of your life. Most people don't live the full length of their life. They make mistakes and it gets shortened. But another reason that people die, it's time to die. They have created a condition that says it's time to leave this world. So now we have Cain coming and killing Abel. Cain did a bad thing. We all agree that he murder is not a wonderful thing. But why did Abel have to die? What did he do that's so horrible? He was just born an hour ago. He died. Not an hour, I'm joking. But he, you know, why? What did he do? Abel, it says in the verse in the Torah, we read it very closely. It says, Abel also brought a sacrifice. What does it mean to also bring a sacrifice? It means it's not the most important thing in your life. It means you love the physical pleasures more than the spiritual work. And that, at his level of righteousness, was sufficient for him to have to die as a lesson for us. It's all in the Torah. We just have to learn it. We have to learn how to read the code. And the code is on many different levels.
Pretty heavy,
huh? I agree. I agree. You know, I know many people, I have students in their 70s and 80s. They're still here. They're still looking forward to the future because they know that lesson. I have other students who say, this is too hard, I want out. It's all part of the process. Yes?
I was wondering if that's it.
It's an excellent question. The question is, do you need to read or speak Hebrew? And the answer is, does it help? Yes. Is it necessary? No. I choose not to speak Hebrew. I can read Hebrew. I can read, and to some extent I can understand what I read. Most of what I've learned is in the English translations of what's learned. But I know what I have learned from the English is on a lower level, and so I make my business to see what was in the original Hebrew. What is it actually saying, rather than accepting the translation? But the answer to your question is, God said there was light, and there was light. He used Hebrew words. He used sounds of Hebrew letters. He created 22 essential essences. Love, unity, fire, water. Each of those essences connect to one of the letters. The letters connect to each other and build words. Our words, just like his words. He said, let there be light, and there was light. He created through words. Abracadabra. You familiar with that term? You know what it is? It's an Aramaic phrase that means I create what I speak. Abracadabra. You want to know how you kill people? You tell the truth about them. Ready for that one? It's called Lashon Hara, evil speech. It's not a lie. But your consciousness of why you are telling the story to somebody else is for them to think less of that person. In essence, you are drawing life force from that person. You are draining them of life force. You do it enough, enough people do it, they die. But they're vulnerable to it. They created the condition to be vulnerable.
Basically what
we call gossip. But no, gossip is usually not true. I'm talking about truth. Gossip is a... I'm talking about the different...
somebody else your experience. What did you get away?
You have a beautiful blouse tonight. Why did I say that? I'm doing it as part of education and teaching, but... why does a woman come up to another woman? Why does a woman come up to a baby stroller and say, you have a beautiful baby? And what you're really doing is, you're doing it because you don't have a child, and that was it. All of this is how people die. Our words have power. We learn in Kabbalah how to control those words so that we don't make that mistake. One of the reasons I don't choose to speak Hebrew is there's a word that you've read in the first part of the Torah. It says, God saw that the day, he created the day, I'm paraphrasing, but it essentially says that he saw everything he created was good. That's on the first day. On the second day, he doesn't say that. On the third day, he says everything he created was very good. That Hebrew word very transfers the energy of death, according to the Kabbalists. I choose not to say Hebrew words because I don't know what I'm transferring. I'm not on that level to see all of what I transfer. Now, we have a land, the state of Israel, that has been recreated and speaks Hebrew again after 2,000 years of it not being spoken. But the people who speak that language do not understand what they are doing and transferring. The religious people do not speak Hebrew except when they're studying Torah. They speak Yiddish, they speak Ladino, they speak other languages, and they speak Hebrew within the country because that's the tongue of the country. But there's very few native Hebrew speakers. The home is rarely a place where Hebrew is spoken, because they don't know what they're transferring, and they know they don't know it on their level of their soul, and they protect themselves. You started to ask your questions.
I think I was talking about the evil speech.
Yes.
So if I just say compliment, like a jealousy.
Please, you don't have enough knowledge to accept that statement on its face value. So don't operate that way. But over the course of the classes, we will talk about evil speech. We will give you the tool of how to protect it. I see you wearing a red light bracelet. Okay. There's something called a red string that is sold by the Kabbalah Center and has now become sold throughout Israel, the nation state. That red string is a protection shield against people speaking to you Lashon Hara, evil speech. It can be used also as a reminder to you not to speak evil speech. It works both ways. It's up to you. But we'll talk about it as one of the tools. You can choose to use it or not as you may. You'll notice I don't. But I will explain it to you. Yes.
What you're saying about evil speech is about the same as saying that you need to be careful with your intentions, because you could be very sincere about, that's a beautiful baby, and you have a baby, or you don't have a baby, but you're not wanting a baby. You just say, well, I admire the beauty in that person.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. Are you aware of what your unconscious is doing right now?
To some extent, yes. To some extent, no.
Okay. To the extent that it's no, every word you utter, Kabbalah teaches that it comes from your unconscious, from that area that you have no connection to. The reason that you utter that word, the reason that you find yourself in this class, the reason that wherever you are, you have been put there in order to exchange energy, to create tikkun with the souls around you. When you drive down the highway, the Kabbalah tells us that our aura extends 84 inches in all directions. If you go out 84 inches and the car next to you goes out 84 inches, you're exchanging energy as you pass his car. That's why you're driving on that freeway at that moment, not because you're driving home. Your unconscious puts you in that situation to exchange energy, to balance the universe.
I drive by native people, I can feel it.
Okay. I understand.
That was my next question. What does the Kabbalah say about spiritual tension?
one of the tools. We all have the ability to be psychic, is the terms, one form or another, spiritual senses. We all have those abilities. Some of us are given those at birth, and some of us have to develop them. But the tools will help you develop them. Okay? And hopefully you were not dissuaded from it, because many parents do that, and it's very untenable.
It wasn't dissuaded, but it wasn't
promoted. It wasn't encouraged.
And it wasn't it wasn't discouraged either. It was not.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, Brian Box is a feeling of energy. Envy, jealousy, and I might include ego as part of the, you know, the...
Envy and jealousy are all components of ego. But that's, we'll go into that. In one of the classes, as part of the classes, we'll come to understand what is the purpose of ego and what is also the correction of ego. Yes?
Can you give a short answer that when kids growing up in this setting, before they go to school or adults,
I understand that, and I.
Yeah, I mean.
The answer to your question is many leveled, but let's just put it: human beings are human beings, and you have a man who is honored because he is called rabbi, and he is considered the source of wisdom in his community. I'm speaking of the shtetls in Eastern Europe. He had 50 families, 200 families, that came to him for advice. One of his students comes and says, what about astrology? And his answer, because he got it out of the Talmud, is, Ein Mazal Yisrael. There's no astrology for Israel. And that's
right.
Now, what is his motivation for giving you that answer? He thinks it's the truth. Okay. Or, he doesn't know the answer. He doesn't know astrology. He's never studied it himself, and he doesn't want to be foolish or look foolish in your eyes. So he gives you an answer. Stay away from it. What is his motivation? Who knows? It was 200 years ago.
Well, today, I mean, there's all rabbis going to school today.
And they go to school and they study Kabbalah academically. And they are given the Kabbalah academically today. And why? Because 20 years ago, the Kabbalah Center started to attract people who had been
leaving the temples.
And so to keep them connected, they compete. Any other questions? We will meet next Monday. You're welcome to come to, next Sunday at 7 at this location. You're welcome to come Monday night's class. You're welcome to listen to any of my classes during the week. I give 10 classes. 6 of them are introductory classes at different stages in the 20 weeks. And Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights are advanced classes that you don't have the background yet, but you will get what you get from them. So come listen and see if it's worthwhile. The Tuesday night class is the writings of Rabbi Ashlar, who brings spiritual concepts and ideas into logical level. And his tools are amazing, but it's very intellectual. It's not emotional. The Wednesday class is about mitzvot. Mitzvot are those actions that we are to do or to not do that keep us or separate us from the Creator. And what is the consciousness, the kavanah, the intention that we should have when we do that? we spoke about is certain levels of idol worship. We're supposed to not cut down. We're supposed to cut down a tree that was used as an Asherah tree, an idol worshiping tree. It hasn't been an idol worshiping tree unless we talk about the Druids for about 3,000 years. Why do we still need to cut it down? What is that telling me in my life today? And that's what we talked about. Thursday night, I read from the Zohar. I read the Aramaic. I read an English translation. And if I feel the verse needs additional commentary, I will give you additional commentary. But we'll learn more about that next week. I just make them available to you. The codes, the phone call is always the same codes. You just need to know what time we're starting. And it's pretty similar, 10 o'clock Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights, 7 o'clock Sunday, 7:30 Monday, 7 o'clock Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. Any other questions?
Why hasn't the concept or the doctrine of reincarnation been trickled into the mainstream Christianity religion and the mainstream Jewish religion as well?
I'm going to put an end to the conference call, and I'll answer your question. But I want to call. It's been an hour and a half, and that's you have a lot of material that may feel overwhelming, or may feel exciting. It's all part of the process. So I'm going to put an end to the conference call because it's time.